Welcome to Out There with TJ Ryan. It's strange. It's unusual. It's mysterious. It's out there, out there, out there, out there. And now your host, TJ Ryan.
Thanks for joining me. And this week, and you know that when she was on before, I probably got more hits and more comments on her episode. Most were pretty positive, Linda, believe it or not. But some people thought it maybe was a little little goofy. Linda Godfrey is from Wisconsin. What part? What is the name of the town? Is it
Elkhorn?
That's what I just came to me. I haven't talked to you in so long. I thought, wait a second, it's Elkhorn, isn't it? I just had that thought.
Yep.
Across my mind. Now, where is that? That's like in the southeastern part of the state?
Right. It's in the southeastern part, kind of midway between Madison and Milwaukee, but south of each of them.
And you live in a small town.
It's a very small town, and I'm out in the sticks beyond the small town.
Now, if you're not familiar with Linda, she's been on my program before. She's been on other programs like Monster Quest, Coast to Coast. What other shows have you been on that people might recognize?
Oh, I've been on Sci-Fi's New In Search Of, an AMC show, Discovery Kids, Inside Edition. I've actually got a whole list of them somewhere.
That's really taken off, isn't it? Amazing how, you know, you said you were involved in the original, like one of the original scripts in Monster Quest.
Right.
And years ago, how many years ago did you investigate your first Beast of Bray Road, the man-wolf? How long ago was that?
Well, this all started in December of 1991.
So in 19 years, it's really kind of taken off a lot in the last few years, I would guess, right?
Well, once the books came out, it got a lot more widespread and much more notice. So, but it never really, the interest never died away. I mean, over the 10 years after that I worked at the newspaper, what happened steadily was that people came to me to report seeing the creature, and the media came to me because I was pretty much the only one collecting contemporary encounters with what many people, for lack of a better term, were calling a werewolf, because it stood 5 to 7 feet tall, was covered with fur, looked exactly like a wolf or a German shepherd, except walking and running upright and using its paws a little bit more like hands, holding and carrying carcasses rather than running with them in its mouth.
Enough to scare the living whatever out of people to begin with. You claim, as I recall, Linda, didn't you see something kind of at a distance too?
I did, in Michigan, where it's the same creature described right down to the last detail and behavior. But it's, of course, it's known as the Dog Man more popularly there. But and this actually starts out my new book, which is called The Michigan Dog Man, Werewolf, and Other Unknown Canines Across the U.S. I was there with a History Channel crew. We were on a very remote, isolated road near Big Rapids and Reed City, and something was running around the edges of our spotlight, and this is in the middle of nowhere.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were swamps and, you know, brambles on either side and this little gravel road. And I turned at one point and saw something upright. You know how sometimes you just catch the outline of something silhouetted against the light?
Right.
And just for a moment, I caught about an inch width of gray fur. It was upright. That was all I saw. I couldn't see the head or the feet or anything. But it blotted out a reflective road sign, and we measured it later. It would have had to have been 6 to 7 feet tall in order to do that, just momentarily as it ran in front of it. And we had a couple of the other witnesses there with us who also saw it at the same time.
That's good you had some witnesses. Imagine trying to tell somebody when you're a solo witness.
Yes.
It's got to be more difficult.
That's why so many of these people who come forward, I feel, are very brave souls, and I give them a lot of credit. They have nothing to gain in most cases. Very, very few of them make it about them, you know, which is about the only case that I really get suspicious of.
Right.
Most of them just say, I wanted to tell somebody who wouldn't think I was crazy. I don't care if you publicize it or not, you know. A lot of them don't even want their names used.
Right. And that's another way I can tell too. When I'm, you know, sometimes I'll talk to some people when I'm doing an interview, and if they're kind of leery, and I don't force anybody, obviously, or convince them, manipulate them to come on. But if I say, well, you don't have to use your last name, or, and then I kind of know that they're not really doing this for a specific reason.
Right. The other way to tell is, and this goes for Bigfoot witnesses too, there's a certain type of witnesses that sort of makes it all about them. Like, I'm really special. I see them in my, they come and bring little rock presents in my backyard.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of thing. Then I get really standoffish from that, you know, and I don't think Bigfoot braids little horsey tails and leaves them for people to find and things like that, you know.
Hmm. So you haven't had any Bigfoot sightings?
Yeah, well, not personally, but something I've been noticing, it's kind of weird because there was just one about half an hour from my house about a month ago, really not very far away, and the person's father finally called me. It was a 51-year-old lady, so her father is fairly elderly. The interesting thing is that I had just decided to compile all the area Bigfoot sightings for this new book and realized that they all fell along a certain territory that was directly adjacent to the territory where the sightings tend to all be man-wolf. And it's like the same type of terrain attracts them both, but they each have their own special territory. And I'm in the process of mapping it out and hoping to post it on my MySpace. I have a blog under just Linda Godfrey, all run together, on MySpace. And I hope to get something posted up there soon. I've got so many deadlines.
Right. You're busy.
You're very busy.
I've tried to interview you now at least four times, and that's I totally understand. You have a life, and I apparently don't. No, but you have a new book coming out, too, that's out right now. You got two books. One's Haunted Wisconsin, right?
Right. Haunted Wisconsin, Ghosts and Other Strange Phenomena of the Badger State, and that just came out from Stackpole Books. Should be pretty widely available online, and I know it's in stores in Wisconsin. I just did a signing at Barnes & Noble in Racine for it. And it's what they asked for was landmark cases, you know, large public buildings, well-known cases like Summerwind. But, you know, I found some that could be considered landmarks that really haven't been widely written about, such as Victor Borhage, who was the director of the Milwaukee Public Museum. Very flamboyant. He wore capes and, you know, just was really a well-known and popular figure and was killed in a car crash only a few blocks from the museum and is now widely rumored to haunt the Shrunken Head section of the museum. And I have this for museum employees, you know, and officials. It's not just like, you know, a strange urban legend. He's seen fairly frequently in that museum, and it's something that isn't talked about a lot.
And this is something you told me in the past, because I think it's always cool that people have their own experiences. And I imagine a lot of people go into this, start looking at the things, because they've had experiences. But you've kind of had your own experiences with those kind of things.
Well, I have from time to time, you know. And it isn't really that I seek them out, but just odd things happen to happen, you know, at many times when I'm around. And there's kind of a saying that when you go looking for the strange or the weird, it comes looking for you. Mm-hmm. And I think that when you do go and investigate these things, you do, to some extent, open yourself up, and you have to be really careful. And I personally am a Christian and have a lot of, you know, try to do a lot of protective groundwork along those lines. I know other people who have their own rituals that they feel work, but you really have to be careful and not go willy-nilly. I've seen what look like ghosts on my investigative travels several times, and both times it shocked me so much that even though I had a camera around my neck, I was too surprised to take a picture. And in both instances, it wasn't like a, ooh, cool, neat, yay, I'm glad I'm seeing this. It was more like, ah, get me out of here now. It wasn't a pleasant feeling. You know, it was really, really unpleasant, and I didn't really want to seek it out again.
No kidding. Now, on a personal question, because you say you're a Christian, can you explain these things? I mean, do you believe that the man wolf, you've been pretty much on a search for that. I got to believe you're a believer of what these people have seen. You've talked to many people. What is that?
Well, for one thing, I'm not sure that the man wolf is supernatural. I mean, many of my Native American friends believe that it's a spirit animal, that it travels back and forth between worlds. But every time I think I'm coming over to that camp, you know, I'll get a few new sightings. And the thing is, in probably somewhere in the high 90th percentile of sightings, it does nothing that a natural creature couldn't do. It's just that the behavior is so odd. Canines can walk and even dance upright for long extended periods of time. There's a hilarious YouTube video going around of this Mexican man who teaches his dog, and it's a fairly large sort of retriever-looking dog. I don't know what the breed is. He teaches it to do the merengue. It's got a little skirt on, and it is the most hysterical thing. It goes on for like 4 minutes, this whole long involved dance, and the dog is on its hind legs just beautifully. It dances better than the man, actually. You know, so it's not that dogs and wolves and other things need a supernatural ability to run and walk upright. They can do that. The question is why they would. You know, how would they motivate or train themselves to do this? And then the other thing that people always notice is that they feel these creatures are more intelligent than your average dog or even wild animal. They feel that it's looking at them with a keen awareness, that it's curious, that it's almost arrogant in its knowledge that they are more powerful and could do you harm if they wanted
to. But they haven't hurt anybody that you know.
No, and that, you know, if people were making this up, I would think that over time I'd be getting various reports of, oh, I saw it, you know, eat my neighbor or dishes or, you know, whatever. But even though many people feel that it's angry, that it wants to eat them for lunch, that, you know, it's just intimidating, that it fake bluff chases them, that sort of thing, it never, except with one exception in Quebec, Canada, has anybody reported an injury. And even that man, it lunged at him, grazed his hip with one of its fangs, and he felt that it missed on purpose because if it had wanted to at such a close range with its size, it could have disemboweled him easily. And instead he ended up with this just kind of superficial cut that he had to go and get stitches in, and he told them at the hospital that it was a bear because he didn't feel anybody would believe him.
Yeah, but I mean, I know what you're saying, that this could be like a creature we haven't discovered, but I don't think so. After talking about all this, I mean, in my own personal belief, this is something, it just doesn't sound like an animal.
No, it doesn't sound normal. You know, it really doesn't. I don't know. I think there's a possibility that somehow some strain of wolf species might have adapted to be able to do this and is able to teach it to their young, because they do seem to have longer, larger foot pads than most, even wild timber wolves, and larger, which you'd really need if you were going to stand up for any extended, you know, and run especially on your hind legs, as these things are seen to do. So it's possible there's some adaptation going on of a natural creature. I'm sure that some of the sightings are honest mistakes of, you know, just mistaken identity of other creatures. That can be, too. I don't think most of them are, but I think that can explain a few.
Certainly.
And I'm sure there are a few that were hoaxes. People who like to do that are always popping in there, which is really stupid because a lot of people carry guns.
Right.
And have any compunctions about shooting something.
Not real smart if they're doing that. We're going to take a break in just a moment. What is your website again, if you can, Linda?
I have two, beastofbray.com, or weirdmichigan.com.
Okay. And the names of your books are Wisconsin, Haunted Wisconsin, Ghosts of, and I can't read my
Ghosts
writing.
Ghosts and Strange Phenomena of Manchester State.
Okay. And the other one is Michigan Dog.
The Michigan Dogman, Werewolf, and Other Unknown Canines Across the U.S. That'll be out next month.
I probably should learn how to write better, but I think I was bitten by a man wolf one time.
There you go. And it got your writing.
Affected writing my... I mean, he just scratched me. But I think it's really fascinating. Thanks for talking. We'll take a break and talk more in just a moment.
Okay.
Out there.
Coming up next week, we're going to talk to an author of a book who is a meteorologist at a local TV station in Upper Michigan. And it's a book he co-authored from a... It's about an almanac about Upper Michigan. But it's got some interesting things inside there. A lot of history, but even talks about Bigfoot in there. Bigfoot sightings, which they said they kind of did as a joke. And then they started to look into it and thought, hey, this is interesting. So we'll talk to Carl Bonack next week and his new book about Upper Michigan Almanac. But Linda is, if you've never heard her on this show before, she's been on lots of programs. What she has to say just sounds unbelievable. But I'll tell you what, I used to be a skeptic and didn't think that this was something that was real when I first heard of this. And after I talked to her and I started to look into this more, and then you start to hear some stories, you certainly believe it's possible, that's for sure. Thanks for listening.
Hi, this is Linda Godfrey. You can check out more about my investigations and books at several websites. You can go to weirdmichigan.com or beastofbrayroad.com. Also look for me on MySpace as Linda Godfrey, Twitter as Linda S. Godfrey, and I have a WordPress blog as well.
It's out there.
Fresh off her visit to the Keewaydin Casino in my nape, the neck of the woods, which is actually Sault Ste. Marie, which is about 150 miles from where I'm doing this broadcast. Linda was out there. I guess the casino brought in people from what's the show?
Taps.
Okay, that one and several other.
Chip Coffee, I guess he has a
Paranormal State or something like that.
Yeah, Paranormal State I think was in there. Chip Coffee and Justin Perry.
And the guys from Taps. Now you never have seen the show, but who's
we don't
the guy?
Have cable. I live with a frugal man in in the sticks, you know, and we just don't have cable.
But you're saying like what the heck's his name?
I know
name?
Who they are.
What's the heck's? Who's the guy that was? Do you recall at least one of their names?
Well, there's Jason.
Jason, that's mm-hmm. the one. Yeah, Jason and the other guy, dark-haired guy, and then. Several other different groups were there, you know, and I looked at that lineup and I thought, well, I'm not as interested in that. There's so much stuff about ghosts out there, mm-hmm. and I'm interested in that somewhat, but it's cool to talk to you about like Dogman, because not many people are talking about that, you know,
right.
or even Sasquatch. I mean, there's people talk about that, but that's still not as popular. Everybody's talking about ghosts, but you put a lot of time into researching Haunted Wisconsin. I'm sure you took, you know, because there's a lot of people out there saying, well, this is haunted, this is haunted. So you did your homework on that.
Well, I did. And because they wanted a lot of the landmark cases, you know, big hotels and, for instance, the Pfister in Milwaukee has been considered so haunted that a lot of Major League ball players who come and stay there refuse to stay there anymore.
I've heard of that.
Yeah, it's crazy. So I investigated that and found a lot of good stuff. And there are things like the old Madison Jail that is in many national publications as one of Wisconsin's most haunted locations, and they give the address. The only trouble is the address they give is for the new city-county building, the old Madison Jail. I had to really find a Madison historian and dig around a lot, and we discovered that the old Madison Jail was located a couple blocks away and is now a parking lot.
Mm.
So, and the people in the new Madison building have never experienced any kind of hauntings. It's at a whole different location.
So you've done investigated hauntings for a long time, too, as well, I'm guessing, right?
Well, yeah, I sort of have. You know, it started in earnest with the Weird Wisconsin book by Barnes & Noble, and then I got to do the Weird Michigan book, and then the sequels to both of those, Strange Wisconsin and Strange Michigan. So I put 5,000 miles on my car in Michigan alone, and a lot of that was investigating sites of hauntings, you know, and there were two places in Michigan that really freaked me out. One was in Manistee. It was the basement of what's now like an office building.
Mm-hmm.
And we were down, the owner didn't know I was coming. There was no way she could have set up. But we were down in the basement that was supposedly haunted by Basement Billy, who was a young man who died of typhoid back in the late 1800s. And I saw, we were standing in pitch blackness, there was nothing in there. It was a dirt floor, paper wrapping any of the ductwork. I saw a basketball-sized globe of kind of a phosphorescent seeming light. It didn't give off, it didn't illuminate anything, but it lit up and you could see it. And it had a projection on either side, almost like an arm or a wing. And it was about maybe 10 feet away from me and a foot below the very low ceiling. And I was so shocked, I couldn't believe my eyes. I thought my eyes were playing tricks in the blackness. Mm. And I turned my head, and then I looked back, and it was still there.
Mm.
And I thought, how long is that thing going to... And I felt that it had a sort of awareness. That was the weird thing, that it had come because I was expecting it. And that freaked me out. And just as I was getting my numb fingers to work again and slowly hoist the camera up to take a picture of it, then it faded away.
Now, do you think they do that deliberately? They don't want their picture taken.
It seemed that way. You know. And the odd thing was that the woman who was with me, who knew the story and everything, said she saw it too, except she saw the full figure of a young man.
Hmm.
Which makes me wonder if there's some sort of sentient energy that can funnel itself through your own, my expectations were very unformed, and so I saw, you know, just this sort of generic, ball of light, but her expectations were very detailed, and it seemed almost like it was filtered through each of our brains to show us what we wanted to
see. That is interesting. I don't know if I've ever heard that. Two people looking at the same thing, but seeing something different.
Right.
That is interesting. So, again, with your personal beliefs, what do you think these things are?
I don't know. I don't think that they're good. I really wanted to get out of that basement fast. You know, I had just a very bad luck. And I think it can be unhealthy. I mean, I did these investigations in the spirit of being able to write about them historically and sort of test it out for my readers. But, I think it can be unhealthy to be too preoccupied with them. I think that some of the forces could be what you call demonic. Some people might call them more of an earth trickster force.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever name you want to call it by, they really aren't there for our good. I do think that they're listed in the Bible. When Jesus appeared to the disciples, he said, you know, a ghost has not wounds such as I have. So obviously that term was... used, you know, in older times, not in English, of course, but...
So do you believe that it's possible that these could just be spirits that haven't moved on?
In some cases, perhaps. I don't think there's any way to really know for sure. I do believe that we have a soul or a spirit that lives on, and I don't know. You know, I just don't know how fast it goes wherever it goes.
What about, like, ones that are coming back to visit you after they pass?
I like to think that they're permitted to come and visit or see us or guide us. You know, I feel sometimes that my own departed dad is with me at times, and I don't know what the real extent of that is. You know, maybe it's just impossible for us to know from this side. But I do know that really most of the ones that you seek and go out and find in these psychic hotspots are probably not there for your good guidance.
You don't think you should hang out with them too much?
I think it can be dangerous, and I've personally seen people who did that and really got into believing them and communicating with them and that sort of thing. You know, when you get to that extent, I think that it can be sort of dangerous for your psyche.
Mm. All right. Well, it's interesting that you've had at least the first-hand experience, because a lot of people will talk about this and write about it, but maybe they really haven't had a whole lot of interaction. So I think it's always cool when people can talk about that. Now, your new book that's coming out, we talked about the Dog Man. Are there more stories on that? Do you keep getting stories about that?
Oh, yes. Yeah. In fact, I had an email from a man just recently who only a couple of weeks ago was camping in Fayette State Park.
Fayette?
Yeah. Right, kind of by Manistique there.
Yeah. You know? I know where that is.
There's a wonderful, fabulous historic ghost town kept up by the park system where, it, to me, it has an unprecedented number of preserved buildings.
Right.
That are just fabulous. But my husband and I drove home that way from the Keewatin Casino.
Right.
And we visited the ghost park, too. But we also visited campsite number 34, which is where they were staying. But this was a 40-year-old man and his wife and their three children who were aged, like, from 8 to 12. And the oldest child and the husband and wife were sitting up late at a campfire after most of the other camp had gone to bed. And the wife saw, first of all, they heard twigs snapping.
Mm-hmm.
And then they heard something really tall brushing along the top of their tent. They started to get alarmed. And the wife saw what she thought was the shadow of something wolf-like, and she accused her husband of playing a trick. And the daughter said, "No, Mom, he was right here. He didn't do anything." And then they all saw something that, it was the silhouette kind of shining through the tent opposite where they were from the campfire. It was a silhouette of something that had a very clear wolf or German shepherd-like head with an upright body walking on its hind legs, and it was at least 6 feet tall, and it sort of moved rapidly across the front of the, came around the side of the tent, across the front, and then just melted into the woods. And the woods are not real dense, you know, there's not a lot of thick vegetation there. It's this beautiful stand of old trees with gnarled roots, and very mossy ground, so unfortunately it didn't leave any prints. I looked everywhere, and I couldn't find a footprint of any kind when I visited the campsite.
Oh,
but it goes down to the beach of Bay du Nac. Is that the one?
Big Bay du Nac.
Big Bay du Nac, yeah. It goes right down to the water's edge. And one thing about these creatures is that they are almost always seen near some sort of body of water or creek bed, at least. You know, so it fits in with it all. But I kind of noticed that the layout of where the campground was and where they would have been cooking, it was probably checking out to see if there's any meat left over on their
barbecue. You know what? That is so crazy because as you say this, one of my guests that I had on, he's a fellow that does some fishing up in Alaska, and I thought he'd be pretty interesting to talk to. He's from Garden, which is not far from Fayette on that peninsula.
Right.
My wife and I and my in-laws, I haven't been there in a few years. This year we took a run. It was kind of a rainy day. We took a run out to Fayette. If she ever hears this story, she will never go camping with me again. I guarantee you. When we were camping 1 year, and this is 97. This is 2 years this happened. 97 and 98. Now, this is more of a spirit, I think. But in 97, I wake up. And I look over in the corner of the tent. Now, this is actually at Hog Island Campground, which you would have went by as you were traveling down US 2. I don't know if you saw that.
I did.
And I looked over, and the lanterns turned on. And I woke up my wife, and I said, "Did you use that?" She goes, "No way. I don't go out there by myself to the, you know, where you have to walk to the restroom, the outhouse." And so we just happened to have to go. It's like somebody turned it on for us. And I said, "Okay, you got to go?" "Yeah, I got to go." "Okay, well, let's use it." And so then, well, that's mild. The next year, we go back again. I wake up, and you know the lantern's off because it has to be dark in the tent in order to sleep.
Right.
I'm not going to fall asleep. So I didn't leave it on, but I wake up, it's midnight, and I look over, I said, "Did you turn that on again?" And she said, "No." I said, "Well, you got to pee?" And she goes, "Yeah." So, okay, let's use it. And we get back in the tent. And I'm starting to doze off, and we're talking for a bit. I said, "I wonder if it's a spirit." She goes, "Yeah, it could be."
Very helpful one.
Yeah. And so I turned it off, and I said, "I'm going to lay this." Now, this is way in the corner, so there's no way we could have kicked it on. And we got sleeping bags. It was impossible. We got a pretty good-sized tent. So I laid it right next to the air mattress. And I said, "Now, if this thing turns on, I'm going to freak out." And so we're talking a little bit, you know, and then I start to doze off. And she's pretty frightened this whole time. And she hears footsteps outside the tent walking around. And the next thing you know, and I'm just awake enough, barely, where the click, I hear the click and the light goes on by itself.
Whoa.
Yeah, that was pretty cool.
Whoa.
And so, I mean, I don't know. I did it 2 years in a row. Maybe somebody just, I kind of think spirits are stuck in an area. Mm-hmm. And if sometimes somebody's open to them, they try to make contact with them.
Yeah, I think of it as electromagnetic energy that sometimes is sort of tethered to one spot. You know, there are theories about certain types of rock crystal being in the ground that
right.
can rub against each other and make what they call piezoelectricity, and mm-hmm. perhaps sometimes that can produce infrasound, which has been shown to produce actions that are unexplainable and sights that are unexplainable and fear reactions in humans, too. So there is this whole sort of geomagnetic earth science aspect to it. But I also do think that there are entities that can get tethered to a location and that can mimic things or do things, you know, to freak you out.
Or they can try to, I don't know, I don't know if you probably saw the movie Ghost,
mm-hmm.
Whoopi Goldberg, and this is kind of how I see it. Once you have the ability to see them, they like to make themselves known.
Yeah, I think that's true. There's an opening and they go for it. And we feel, and you can also get that with objects, you know, and I've had people mentioning this to me lately, it seems quite often. But if anybody read my book, The Beast of Bray Road, where it talks about this, the Wolfenstone, or actually, now that I talk about it, I'm not sure that it isn't in the second one, Hunting the American Werewolf. In one of those, anyway, there were these strange stones dug up near Palmyra that they're sort of like foundation blocks, and they have these carved faces that look just like werewolves, pointed ears, you know, the whiskers, kind of a half-human, half-wolf mm-hmm. face. And the man who was digging them up in the back of his property gave me one. It was just like a half one, but it had the face on it. And I just thought it was sort of a neat artifact, and I had it on the mantle of our fireplace for a long time. Well, my husband and I both started noticing that very odd things were happening right in that vicinity. Go to bed, lie down, and 2 minutes later, you hear sharp footsteps walking across the parquet floor downstairs, and nobody's there, the house is locked. Unexplainable loud pops in the air of the living room right around there that just sounded like somebody popped a balloon over your head.
Mm-hmm.
things started happening to our dog, just odd things, which culminated with one night it being somehow locked in the front coat closet.
Wow.
With nobody around there, and it was too scared to bark and tell us what we finally, you know, it was bedtime and we were looking for him. And finally, my son whistled in a certain way, and we heard this little whimper, and he was locked in that coat closet. And there's no way, for one thing, he never goes in there. For another thing, there's no way he could have shut the door on himself. And he never would have allowed us. It's not that big of a closet. We couldn't have shut it without seeing him. And he wouldn't have allowed us to shut the door on him. You know, he would have been.
Do you think, Linda, that animals can sense things that people can't?
Yes, I do. I definitely do.
And they can see things that we can't.
Yeah, he'll be sitting and all of a sudden just stare at something like 3 feet in front of him and there's nothing there. You know, and he'll growl a little or the hackles will raise up. And there's absolutely nothing that makes any sense. I should mention that everything stopped when I took that stone out of the house.
You know, you hear the legend about people that go to Hawaii, and they're not supposed to take rocks from a certain volcano.
Right.
And then all these things happen to them.
Yeah.
And I remember hearing a story about a man who actually mailed the rocks back because he wanted it to stop. You know, he said, okay, that's enough. I'm sending the rock back to you. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to take it. So you wonder if there's an energy in all things, and I believe there is, even things that aren't like a pen that I'm holding in my hand. There's energy in that right now, and my energy has been transferred into it as well because I've used it. So if there's energy in all things around us, who's to say if you were to take something like what you did, a piece of something, whatever was there at one time is still around it, perhaps.
Well, what I'm able to tell about these stones, research that I've done in Palmyra, I believe that they were once part of the town's first Masonic lodge, which burned at one point.
And how does that connect to it? What do you feel about Masonic lodges?
Well, I don't know. I've done a lot of research. I know a fair amount. There are some people who've written some pretty good books on it. But they do perform a lot of ritual.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, when you do anything where you're performing rituals and you're... I don't know exactly the word.
I mean, there's been some people that have said the Masons or the Masonic teachings. I've heard people say go as far to say that there's devil worship. I don't know. I don't believe that necessarily. But
I haven't seen that exactly in the exposition, and I think a lot of it's according to your interpretation of what they do. But I think just the act of having the rituals and it's hard telling. It's hard to judge people's intent.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, you'd think that these stones have turned up at a few houses, historic houses around that town, which I've determined were all homes of former master masons, grand lodge masters,
mm-hmm.
in that town, which seems a little strange. And why would they go to the trouble of burying them out at the lot line as far as they could possibly get them from their farmhouse?
Hmm. That is
unless
a good
they
question.
Were having troubles too.
That's a good question. Wow. Hmm. I guess I never really looked into Masonic stuff. I've seen so much on it, you know, on TV over the years, and people write books about it, and how the Freemasons were part of a secret society. I'm sure you've heard that before. And
well, it may just have been that these carvings were doing things to them that they didn't like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It may not have been their fault at all. They just, you know, didn't like the effects of them.
Don't you think it's amazing how much stuff is really out there that we really don't know about? And even today, you know, even with Sasquatch, Bigfoot sightings, people have them all over the place up here. You wrote a book, co-authored a book with, even though it wasn't about Sasquatch, but with a gal that I've had on my show more than once. So you've seen so many different types of paranormal. Does anything really surprise you?
Oh, things surprise me all the time. If they didn't, it would be so boring I would just stop, you know. But really, every time I get a sighting, it surprises me. I think, wow, somebody else saw something that they just cannot explain in any way, shape, or form.
Right.
You know, and whether it's, and even just some of the roadside things. I had a chance to really go through Lakenin land and see some of the new pieces.
Oh, you checked that place out too? Oh,
it's,
okay.
Yeah, it's featured in Strange Michigan, but it has so much more than you can see in the book. And just had the best time going around and thinking, wow, the mind of one man and the time he put into all this.
It's right.
Everything surprises me. I love
actually
that.
Had Tom on one of my shows.
Did
a little
you?
Bit. Yeah, for a little bit. Well, because we met out there. Mm-hmm. We had met out there. Actually, it was a Sasquatch gathering. We were getting together. And so we were talking to other people that had experiences. And basically, people talked about any kind of paranormal. Mm-hmm. But Tom was there, and he was nice enough to, you know, I think he cooked some hot dogs for us. He's a real generous guy.
He seemed that way, and I was getting the biggest kick out of his newer pieces that all have little messages to the township. And they're all dog men that are giving these messages. That was what I found so funny.
Really?
And one of them was, for instance, one message said, so what are you going to do next, township man? Take away Tom's birthday?
Yeah, that we were out there with Lisa Scheel, actually.
Uh-huh.
That weekend when I met Tom.
Ah.
And that's kind of how I got to know her a bit. And then she teamed up with you, and you guys wrote it. The Strange Michigan book?
The Strange, yeah. She was nice enough to step in and help me. I had a contract for that book, Strange Michigan. I'd already done Strange Wisconsin, and then I got breast cancer, and the time was coming due, and I just could not get up to travel. I wasn't travel worthy.
Mm.
I was still in treatment, and I couldn't get to the UP, and so she came on and did co-authoring there. And, you know, did these spots that I couldn't get to.
It's just, it's kind of interesting how many people, when you start mentioning, like, Tom Lakenin,
mm-hmm.
all these people that I've kind of got to know a little bit, too, there's a bigger connection going on here, it seems like. So it's really nice to talk to you, Linda. We're kind of running out of time, but if you could tell me, again, the book that's out right now and your new book coming up.
The book that just came out last month is Haunted Wisconsin, Ghosts and Other Strange Phenomena of the Badger State. The new one coming out is called The Michigan Dogman, Werewolves, and Other Unknown Canines Across the USA. And you might still also be interested in Hunting the American Werewolf and Beast of Bray Road, Strange Michigan, Weird Michigan, and I've got a website, weirdmichigan.com, that I hope to be updating with a bunch of stuff from my recent trip very soon.
Great.
I'm also on Twitter, if anybody wants to follow me. I probably do that most often, and it's Linda S. Godfrey on Twitter.
Well, I really enjoy talking to you. It really is. You've got a pleasant personality, and you don't take yourself too seriously. Sometimes people do, and then, you know, that just makes it uncomfortable.
Right.
Because
yeah.
It's so hard to prove any of this, you know?
Well, as a former cartoonist, you know, I find it very hard to take myself too seriously.
Same here. It's like, I think life is too short.
Yes.
And you can't, one of our great lessons, too, is to be humble.
Yes.
So if you can't laugh at, and there are some strange things, maybe but that's what these strange things are teaching us, in part, that we have to be reminded.
That's true. Yeah, you just there is something to that idea of the trickster that's there to keep us from being too puffed up, and that's why I always try to stay surprised and appreciative of things that I run into.
Now, those of you that are listening to Linda for the first time and are saying, come on, a man-wolf, a werewolf, and whatever, she was a non-believer.
Right.
And back in what year was it?
Well, it was 91, December 91, going into January of 92.
And that's when you first started to experience going around and trying to find information.
Well, that was when I was working as a newspaper reporter, and that's when it all happened in my hometown, and I was the one who broke the story about it and therefore became the unintentional go-to person both for witnesses and experiencers and the media, and it just kept growing from there, and 10 years later, it seemed to me I had so much, and there was still so much interest that I felt I needed to write a book, so I did.
Well, the last time I talked to you, I had asked you if there were any man-wolf sightings in Upper Michigan, and you reassured me, said, no, you don't have to worry, we haven't heard, and now there is. Great.
Yep, you're no longer.
Now I'm going to go live out in the country, and I'm going to go in my yard, and I, you know, I'm kind of closed off and isolated, and I'm going to go. I was going to have a fire pit, and it's like, no, that's not happening. I'm going to stay in the house.
Yeah, I've got a couple of other ones from the UP in my book too, so they're starting to trickle in. And you know, I'm not sure that the reason is that there are fewer man wolves in the UP as much as it is that there's so much uninhabited region, and the population is so much smaller, there are just fewer people to see them and report them.
Interesting. Well, there's a fella, I wish I'd have paid more attention. This is before I was really doing research on this. You know, some things you hear, and I'm sure maybe you're like this too, you hear and you kind of go, really? Come on. And there was, I did a live broadcast not far from here, not quite downtown Escanaba, but within the Escanaba area. And I was at this pet store, and I was talking to the family, nice family, great people, friendly. And a guy came in the store, and they said, oh, yeah, he lives out in Cornell, which is about maybe 5 to 10 miles away. Cornell's pretty stretched out.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, yeah, he claims he's got werewolves at his place, and he does all this stuff to keep them away. And he doesn't even, he like climbs up this pole at night to sleep. You know, like he's got a pole he slides down. I've heard all these stories about this guy. He blocks out his windows. I mean, have you heard people doing stuff like that?
Maybe not to that extent, but I'll tell you, it is fairly common for people to see them at their windows or even to see them at the windows of other people's houses.
Wow.
This is something that recurs, and I've got several stories to that effect in the new book. And that creeps me out almost more than anything else.
That creeps me out, too, because you know what? If I see one of them in the near future, I'm calling you, Linda.
Please do.
Oh.
I would love it.
You know, here I went camp all these years out here, years ago as a kid, and I never would have thought, you know, I was always open to these things, but some of this stuff you never heard of.
Well, I think they're still really pretty rare, you know, as far as, I think you're still more likely to see a bear or something like that than you are one of these things. Especially if you're looking for one. Almost nobody who expects to see one does. It's, in every case, just about very momentary, fleeting, and unexpected when it happens.
Mm-hmm. And you wonder sometimes if they actually... I kind of have a theory, like with Sasquatch, Bigfoot. They show themselves because they want to certain people.
They do. I made that observation in my first book, The Beast of Bray Road, And I keep seeing that. I keep getting this unsettling feeling. And not only that, it seems that there's sort of a generational thing, too, you know, that within the same family, they'll run into it in different places or, you know, it'll skip a generation. It's almost as if they sort of appear to members of the same family, which is weird.
And you know the weird thing about that, too, and I don't know how you feel about UFOs, but I see the same connection there, too. People within the same family experience things with UFOs.
Well, and a lot of people, and, you know, and I don't poo-poo this view at all because, like I say, I don't claim to know what these things are. A lot of people think that there is one big sentient spirit that somehow differentiates itself and maybe is tethered in different places around the earth, called sort of the either the trickster spirit or you know, the great earth spirit, that somehow manifests itself as all these different things, you know, sort of like the Irish water kelpie that can change form, sort of a natural shapeshifter, that it the Bigfoot, the man wolf, the UFOs, fairies, trolls, all these things are manifestations of this earth spirit that that comes forth in certain areas that we call portals or window areas. That was John Keel's term. And I know some of my friends like Nick Redfern have come to this belief, and Brad Steiger has gone so far as to say that he believes they're all manifestations of some sort of demonic force. So, you know, it's something that a lot of, because you're, when you, one thing that, that mitigates against them being natural animals is when you look at all the sightings we've had in a place like southeast Wisconsin, where you've got all these Bigfoot sightings next door to a place with all these manual sightings, how could such large carnivores be running around finding enough to eat, breeding, you know, doing all the things that they would need to do to sustain their population without far more sightings or leaving more evidence? Or even, you know, being able to do those things in such close proximity with one another.
Well, you know, also, and in part answer to that, too, and there was a woman I just had on my show, and she witnessed a Bigfoot, a white one, fairly close view, and went over, and actually for 10 seconds she saw this.
Wow.
It's not like it was just fleeting. And she said she went over and saw only one track. Now, it's in the middle of winter. And she came to the conclusion, and I'm sure this was over studying many, many, many accounts, that they can leave tracks if they want to, and they can make you not see them.
Yeah, I've heard that too, you know, and in a way it makes sense. They'd almost need to do that in order to escape attention, and that dovetails very well with what all my Native American friends think of them, you know, that of being the part spirit, part earthly animal, that when they're here, they need energy, they need to kill things, you know, they can be completely corporeal, or they can go back into spirit form when it suits them. So, who's to say what it really is? I contend that until I have one, I can say, well, I think this seems likely or that seems likely, but how can I say what it is when I don't have one, you know, to show people?
Well, when you get a pet, just let us know. Linda?
Whether it's a great ape or a canine.
Well, I really appreciate talking to you. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always so much fun.
Music on Out There, created by Kevin MacLeod.
Hi, this is the Dog Man. If you're ever out camping somewhere in Upper Michigan, Wisconsin, Lower Michigan, Canada, maybe the Northeast, and you see somebody that looks like they need a good shave and kind of wolf-like, that's me. Just want to say hi. I'll be watching for you.